Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, boat, motorcycle, whatever it may be. They'll update your policies, take good care of it, because customer service means everything to them. They'll save you money wherever they can. It's all at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Mobile, that is. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Jerry Dulac in a moment, but first our play-by-play call of the day.
62 yards for the win. Jonathan Garibay, the boot is away, and it's good! Walk-off win for the Red Raiders, 62 yards! Welcome to Lubbock, Coach Joey McGuire. The program that he will lead next season just came together for each other and pulled off the miraculous win.
Beth Mullins with the call on ESPN Texas Tech on a 62-yard field goal wins it. Nittany Lion basketball tonight here in Amherst, where I am right now. They'll take on UMass tonight at 7 on, beginning at 6:30. And joining us now from the Steelers Radio Network and also the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, my good friend Jerry Dulac. Great to have you with us, sir.
Well, Steve, a couple things. First of all, no call today is better than any Steve Jones call. Second of all, I haven't been in Amherst since way back when my friend John Calipari was there, and yep. I went up to do a piece on him and spent a couple days in Amherst. But beyond all that, always good to be with you, as you know, my friend.
Always great to have you. Yes, I haven't been here since 1991.
When was Calipari there? Back in the 80s, right?
Probably. Yeah, 80s, early 90s. So Cal was the coach here, and Penn State was in its last year in the Atlantic 10. It's the last time I've been up here.
How about that?
Well, 16-16 yesterday with Detroit. Let's start with this. There were some players, including Najee Harris, who, by the way, have probably never been involved in a game where, you know, there wasn't an overtime that gave you a winner, that didn't know you could end in a tie.
Right.
You know, what we call the Donovan McNabb syndrome. Does that play a role in the attitude about how some guys may have played this thing?
You know, that's a good question. First of all, there's probably very few guys who realize that. I mean, they would be rookies, and for the most part, with the exception of Najee Harris, they probably wouldn't have much of a role in the outcome, but knowing Najee Harris and the way he plays, I don't think that would be an issue at all, you know, with him. That's for sure.
Yeah, that's no fair answer. Very fair. T.J. Watt, he had to sit out a chunk of it after he made that play. Any idea on what his availability is moving forward?
Well, let me also say to Steve, as an alum, I am more dismayed what I am seeing with these close losses and fourth quarter leads that aren't protected than I am by anything I saw yesterday, that's for sure.
Right.
And I'm, of course, referring to what you see up there. I was told TJ, you know, he doesn't need surgery. It's nothing like that. It's nothing serious. Don't know for certain whether it's going to keep him out this week. I think it might, but the injury at least is nothing serious that's going to keep him out for an extended period of time. Excuse me. And that is the good news. Mike Tomlin's news conference will be tomorrow. You know, he sometimes updates us with injuries, even though sometimes he says he's going to update us. He really doesn't, but we'll see. But that's what I know right now. That at least it's not serious enough that he needs surgery.
So as you watched it yesterday, what were a couple of notes that you made on why it played out the way it did?
Well, probably the first thing that jumped out, Steve, was, you know, for the second time in the last three games, I'm losing track with the Seattle game, the tackling is just, it's just really poor, and they're just gouged repeatedly with the run. You know, go back to Seattle, ran for 126 yards in the second half, and they, you know, in that game, blown 14-point lead, went to overtime. Yesterday, the Detroit Lions, who've never run for more than 134 yards in a game this year, and had only rushed for over 200 yards twice in like the last 8 years, had 199 yards rushing with 12 minutes to go in the third quarter. So that to me is what jumps out for any number of reasons. Whether, you know, I don't buy the excuses that, you know, that the Lions came out, you know, using an extra tight end or six offensive linemen. Well, that's fine. Then adjust. Because they continued to do it. Jared Goff was playing with some bad ribs. He did throw it 24 times. But, you know, obviously the fact that they were able to run meant that they were going to continue to try and run. And the Steelers, you know, yeah, they finally, in the last half of the fourth quarter, Steve, I think the last 11 carries netted 8 yards. But, right. You know, by then it's a little too light, you know. The what's the expression? The hay's out of the barn, or the horse's out of the barn, whatever the case may be. And so the fact that they waited that long to be able to stop it did them no good. That was the first thing. The second thing that that really jumped out at me, look, high snaps, two fumbles lost in overtime. You know, poor Pat Freiermuth drops a pass, and 8 plays later fumbles when they could have tried the field goal there. And, you know better than I, ball security is not an issue with Pat Freiermuth. So a lot of strange things happen. But one of the other things kind of subtly I noticed is that, you know, the receivers just weren't getting open. They weren't gaining any separation. So many of Mason Rudolph's throws were contested or tried to be forced into tight windows. And I'm not sitting here defending the guy. He was okay. I'm not going to sit here and say he was terrible. I'm not going to sit here and say he was great. You know, you got to consider the circumstances, too, under which he was playing. But what that tells me, you know, the Lions had 9 passes defense. That's the most against the Steelers this year. And, you know, you're talking about a secondary that ranked last in the league in yards allowed per attempt. So it's not like they're exactly blanketing people and smothering people throughout the year. And yet they were covering those Steeler receivers like they were wearing their jerseys. And so when you see 9 passes defense, that tells me one of two things. Mason Rudolph either wasn't giving them enough time to get open, and I don't think that was the case, but I'll give that as a possibility, or they just weren't gaining any separation and getting open. And to me, that's what stood out, and that's what hurt their passing game. You know, he threw 50 times. He completed 30. Okay, 60% isn't abysmal. But, you know, the longest completion other than that last play to Deontay Johnson, well, not the last one, but the one in overtime, the 36-yarder where he fumbled, their longest completion was 17 yards. And, okay, I know they're playing without Chase Claypool and Juju Smith-Schuster's done for the season. But that's what stood out to me, their failure to take advantage of a secondary that, you know, statistically is one of the worst in the league in terms of giving up longer passes or lots of yards, and they did nothing with it. And their receivers, like I said, they just weren't getting open.
You know, I always feel like when I'm watching games that lose, the team that loses, they'll make losing plays. I felt Detroit made a long list of losing plays yesterday and didn't lose.
Yeah, and that's what was amazing, Steve. I agree with you. Right down to missing the field goal in overtime. You know, missing the extra point earlier. You know, Jared Goff passed for 61 yards through 4 quarters of regulation, and that's I think that's the lowest the Steelers had allowed since Christmas Day 2017. So, you know, in situations like that, you would expect a team to be able to win. But, you know, when you're gouged in a running game like that, And, you know, the Lions are trying to hand it to the Steelers. That's why they're 0-8. And the Steelers are just trying to hand it back to them, again, with everything. You know, they had a touchdown, Najee Harris touchdown nullified by a penalty. They had the four high snaps. The two fumbles lost in overtime. They didn't deserve to win, that's for sure. They're lucky they got a tie out of it.
What's odd is I feel like now that tie is going to play a big role in how the final standings turn out, because that half game, I always feel like every time I see one of these, that I just feel like in the end it plays a gigantic role in what we see.
Yeah, I agree with you, and it always seems to. And, you get half a win and half a loss. But when you start looking at the rest of the conference and tiebreakers, that half a loss, rarely does it seem that the half a victory helps. It's more like the half a loss hurts you more than the half a victory helps you, without question.
Yeah, absolutely. So they got the Chargers coming in on Sunday night. And the Chargers started off great. Now, Jerry, this is an observation I made, and you can then run with it from there as to whether you agree with it or not. I feel like we're in an era right now where we have there are really good teams, but there are no great teams. Is that fair?
You know, I referenced this today, and I've always remembered this, Steve. Sam Weiss, the old Bengals coach, told me this years ago. He said, typically in the National Football League, there's four really good teams and four really bad teams, and the other 24 are trying to figure out if they want to be 10-6 or 6-10. Now, I know it's 17 games now, but typically, he's right. Now, this year, not so much. And what's happening is the past 2 weeks have changed the perception of what people think about who's good and who isn't good, because, we saw the Ravens get manhandled by the Dolphins, if you will, Thursday night. We saw the Steelers lose to the Lions. You see the Browns, who 1 week after coming back with an impressive win, allow 45 points to New England. You see Arizona getting beat again. And I know Kyler Murray's not playing, but still, and the week before, all the upsets. The last 2 weeks have changed the entire perception of the league as to who's good and who isn't good. And, the old on any given Sunday in the NFL, while that's certainly been applicable and believable the last 2 weeks from what we've seen. So, to your point, I tend to agree with you. I still think, and I've thought this for the last couple of weeks, I think Tennessee is the best team in the AFC and maybe the NFL. And when you look at the lineup of people that they've beaten, the Chiefs, the Bills, now New Orleans, and I'm missing somebody in between there. They've won, I think, five games in a row now, and if not six, and they've all been winning teams that they've beaten. And so I think you can make the argument that they're the best team in the NFL. Okay, Arizona had the record, and so they've lost two now because of Kyler Murray not being there. The Rams have been exposed a couple times. I think they're a little overrated, but I think they're good. We've seen Tampa Bay, lose in New Orleans and then lose in Washington. Is there a dominant team? No. But I think right now you can make the case that Tennessee is the best team in the NFL.
So what does it take under the rules for Ben Roethlisberger to be cleared and play? Is it the same? Is he in the same category Aaron Rodgers? No, I mean, he's not in the same category as Aaron Rodgers, but, I mean, what's the protocol to get him back?
Well, he gets tested tomorrow, Steve, and if he gets two, because he's fully vaccinated, and he has told me that he is, which he has said that in the past anyhow, He two negative tests and he can return, and he is hopeful he can return this week, and he will participate in their meetings virtually this week with the hopes that he will get two negative tests in a row and then can return. If he does not get two negative tests in a row, then he is not eligible to return till next Tuesday, so which would be obviously after the Chargers game and before the game against the Bengals. So he did test positive. He is vaccinated. That's where it stands. And obviously he's hopeful that those back-to-back negative tests come about. He's feeling better. He apparently on Saturday, he woke up. He wasn't feeling great Friday, but woke up Saturday, had some of the symptoms, went to the facility for the walkthrough practice, but when he got there, took a COVID test and stayed away from people, and it came back later in the day positive. So that's kind of how that all transpired. But, again, got his fingers crossed that he gets those back-to-back tests. And if he does, he could come back this week, I think, in 5 days. So if he tested Saturday, he could conceivably, I believe, be at Thursday's practice, but Friday for sure.
Okay. Jerry, always a pleasure, my friend. Appreciate it very, very much.
Well, Steve, enjoy Amherst. And I'm hoping one of these last two games, maybe Michigan State or something, we could see something positive, because it's getting frustrating watching these other games slip away.
Yeah, man, I know. The other part, too, is I've been able to cover over the years the U.S. Open, so I'm in the USGA pool. Right. I'm planning on going up to the country club when I come up here. I'm at least put in for it, so then you and I could maybe do some work there.
Absolutely. And, you know, the first U.S. Open I covered out of town, beyond going to Oakmont, but back when I first started traveling, covering the tour, it was at the country club in Brookline when Curtis Strange was. That was the first one I did when I began in the business covering golf and writing golf and traveling.
That is really cool. Well, I'm just thought I'd throw that nugget out there.
There you go. Well, you know, I always tell the golf guys, during the week when I need my little mental respite from the Steelers, I call some of the golf people and chat golf with them just to get a little mental therapy.
And you know what? I think that works wonders.
Yeah. I hear tale that there's a nice club called Bel Air Country Club in Los Angeles Sunday that might have my name on the list Sunday morning before that Chargers game.
Oh,
now, that's a rumor that I hear, but feel free to check it out if you'd like.
I will check out that rumor. Oh, that's tempting. Oh, thank you so much. Now you've dangled that. Oh, wow. Okay. Thanks, Jerry.
Well, I'm coming to town Thursday to pick up my daughter. I'll think of you as I'm breezing through.
Thank you, sir. It's always great to have you, my friend.
All right, man. Always good talking with you, Steve.
Jerry Dulac. All right. We'll take a break. Well, Matt wanted to chime in with something, I'm sure it was.
Well, that was the biggest nugget of that whole interview, was he's going to golf in L.A. before the Chargers game. How about that?
I know. I actually played last Tuesday.
All right.
Believe it or not. I actually went out last Tuesday and played.
Well, it was decent weather for it last week.
It was really nice. And to be honest with you, I was out there Tuesday, and it was just great to just relax, hit the ball. Didn't drive it well, but I hit every other shot well. Like, wow, okay. I got back to hitting my wedges. I mean, the way I've been wanting to hit them, you know, where I hit them. I've hit them really well most of the year anyway, but I was like, well, I had some really good ones. And just got to figure out the driver. Once I figure that out, it'll be fine. All right, take a break. Rich Scarsella, final half hour. We're all out of high school teams now, right?
We are, yep.
State High still in it. State High beat Williamsport.
There you go. All right.
They're still in it, as a matter of fact. Let's see, who the heck do they play? State High won 17-14. Oh, that's right. They play Keith Olsmer's team. I forgot. Delaware Valley. Keith, of course, played football here at Penn State. Delaware Valley, you go up on 84, you see that high school football field right before you get to the New York line. That's
exactly
Valley.
Right. Yep. I've been up there. Yeah. It's a nice campus. So. I've actually played soccer there, in fact.
Oh, did you really?
I have. It's a beautiful campus.
Oh, really? That's cool. That's great. That is great. All right. We will take a break. More in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. SunburyMotors.com. And we're in the mobile Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia Routes, 11 and 15 Hummel's Wharf, and online at SunburyMotors.com on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, boat, motorcycle, whatever it may be. They'll do everything they can to save you money. And they'll also make sure that they take good care of that policy, because customer service means everything to them, because you mean everything to them. Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And we're in the mobile Sunbury Motors studio here in Amherst, Massachusetts. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at SunburyMotors.com. In Amherst, where it's off to the Mullins Center tonight, Nittany Lions and UMass in basketball at 7 on, beginning at 6:30. We now bring in from the Reading Eagle the outstanding Rich Scarsella. My friend, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Hi, Steve. How are you? How was your trip?
How was the trip? Let's see. Supposed to have left at 6:30. The plane got delayed several times. I walked in the hotel at 10.
Oh, boy.
It took a little while to get here. But it's all right. It's all good.
Yeah.
It's all part of traveling. Yeah, it's all part of travel. You get used to it after a while. All right, so two teams went toe-to-toe out there for 3.5 hours on Saturday in the center of the ring. What were your thoughts watching it?
Well, I kind of think the thing that really sticks out like a sore thumb, Sean Clifford getting sacked 7 times, and I don't know how many other times he was knocked to the ground, and I felt sorry for him, and you know, he didn't he wasn't available for post game interviews, and I'm sure it was because he was receiving treatment, and that stuck out to me more than anything. How much trouble the Penn State offensive line had with two really good defensive ends from Michigan, Aiden Hutchinson and David Ajabo, which you know, everybody had talked about last week. And the other one everybody was talking about is the fake field goal attempt in the first quarter. I know it's early and everything, but I still don't understand why that decision was made.
Right. Let's get to the part about negative plays, because there were 12 tackles for losses among those, and 7 of those happened to be sacks. That's 14% of your plays. You ran 86 of them along the way. So what does that do to an offense that, you know, they end up scoring 17 points, so you're looking for more, obviously, in a game like this, putting them behind schedule that often?
Oh, it handicaps the offense. It handicaps the play calling. It doesn't give the lack of protection doesn't give Sean Clifford time to look downfield to Jahan Dotson or whoever else. You know, Penn State, I think, had only 3 explosive plays, meaning 20 yards or longer. It means everything that the other thing is Michigan knows that you struggle to run the football. They're pinning their ears back and coming after Sean. And so, yeah, it means everything. And, you know, they're on their way. I still can't believe this. They're 119th in the country in rushing, and they're on their way right now on track to the second worst rushing average in school history, and the worst was in 2014.
All right, so let's get to that running game part of it. On Saturday, Kevon Lee had 17 carries for 88. So what did you think of him and the marriage between how he's running and the offensive line he has?
I think he's making he's the most effective runner. He doesn't have breakaway speed, but he found a way to gain yards, and I'm surprised it took the 10th game of the season to make him the number one running back, because I think he's been the most productive running back for a while now, for several weeks. And I think he did a really good job. And honestly, I don't understand at the end of the game, when you had a 3rd and 2 on your last possession, why not give the ball to him twice instead of throwing 2 passes? But that's another story. It's because you're worried about them stacking the line or whatever. But, I think Kevon Lee is a very good back. And I think he made the most out of what he had.
There's obviously a precision that has to happen during the course of a game. So, you know, there's a drop ball and a wheel route that probably could have been a touchdown, to be honest with you. You've got a 3rd down play where Haskins and the player attempts to body block him to the ground instead of tackling him. I mean, you get into these big games, the players have to understand the precision of every single play. How tough is it when that happens and you have to then overcome a lack of precision by a player?
Well, there's a lot. It's not just the lack of precision. I mean, the drop passes, and I should have mentioned them earlier, because Sean Clifford, I know, he took a physical beating, and heard whispers, people criticizing him, but there are a lot of drop passes. So yeah, if you're not, you've got to make every catch possible. You're in Division I college football, big time college football, and if a ball hits both your hands, you've got to catch it. I'm sorry. And that's the way I feel. And defensively, I'm with you, Steve. That was a big play that you're talking about when Haskins caught that screen. And, it was, I think, 3rd and 13?
Yes, it was.
3rd and 13. That was a huge play. And Michigan went on to score on that drive. And there was an offside penalty, too, on one of the down linemen on that series. But, you can't afford mistakes when you're playing the number 6 or whatever, number 8, number 9 team in the country who has one loss and a division rival. And you know it's going to be a tough, low-scoring game, and precision is everything. And I don't think there was anything precise about Penn State from the top down on Saturday. I don't. There were a lot of mistakes made.
Yet in the fourth quarter, they're down 14-6. What kind of guts did they show in that sequence where they were able to get the 11 unanswered and go in front?
Yeah, Sean, I thought, showed me a lot converting those 3 for 4th downs on that drive. The receivers showed me a lot. I thought both passes to Tyler Warren for the touchdown and to Jahan Dotson for the conversion were outstanding. And outstanding throws and catches, by the way. And for them to be, climbing, being behind all game practically, or at least for most of the game, and to come back and tie it. And then the defense, which, I do have trouble really knocking the defense, but the defense makes a big, big play. You get the turnover, you have a 1st down at the 16, and you're thinking, boy, a touchdown really puts Michigan, in a bad way, and you're forced to kick a field goal. And really, let's be honest, that was another reason, another sequence where Penn State had a chance to keep the game alive or at least win the game, and the offense couldn't get 16 yards.
Yeah, see, that was one where they get the big break. I mean, Evan Cady gets the big strip.
Ellis
Brooks recovers it. Yeah. Great play all the way through. And you get 3, so Jack Ham and I are looking at it. All right, they got the lead. But at the same time, the two of us conceded right away. But, man, they needed 7 there. It just felt like you needed it.
Oh, he absolutely needed seven there. You have to – I mean, it's not like you got the fumble at the 40 or the 45-yard line. You were at the 16-yard line. And I'd have to look – and, again, I don't want to – you know, you're in the heat of the moment. But I saw the first down play where Lee was the pitch man and Clifford faked it to him and Clifford took it up. I think if he pitched it to him, I'm not saying he would have scored, but it looked like he would have gotten inside the five for sure. And maybe that makes everything different. And again, that's a split second decision. I'm not, you know, things happen in a game. It's really hard to criticize Sean there. But and then two incomplete passes, and you know you have to kick the field goal. And you know you put the game then. You know, again, the defense has been up against it all year long. The defense goes on the field with the lead, and Michigan drives down the field. And you know, you and I know what happened. It's a crossing pattern. Eric Aul catches it at the line of scrimmage. Kalen King runs into Daquan Hardy, and he scores. You know, it was just – it was a really fluky play. It was a good call by Michigan, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
And maybe it gets the first down, but it certainly wouldn't have gotten a touchdown.
I'm with you on Clifford. I you know, it's hard to me, it's hard to be critical of a guy that plays with that kind of guts in the game. I mean, I just that's it doesn't mean he's mistake free. I'm not saying that, but man,
true.
I mean, but the other part that comes to mind to me right away is I see a guy playing with that kind of guts. That's the kind of guy you want out there leading you.
Yeah. I can't imagine how he felt Sunday morning. And this morning, again, climbing out of bed after how many times he was hit on Saturday, and hit hard. Not these weren't glancing blows and just pushed to the ground. He was hit to knocked to the ground. He has shown me a lot this year in terms of mental and physical toughness.
All right, so now you got Senior Day coming up. How tough is it for a team where, you know, you work, you battle. I talked about 3.5 hours, center of the ring, the whole thing, and you don't get the validation out of it. What does it take to bounce back from games like this that are that hard fought and that close?
Yeah, Steve, I'm with you. It's really going to be tough. I mean, maybe it's – you got to find motivation somewhere, and maybe it's playing for the seniors, and you know you don't know who's going, who's staying, and who's going either. Or maybe they do inside the locker room, but we don't publicly. But you got to play for the seniors. I mean, that's really all it's about, and play for yourselves. And hey, this is my last. The seniors got to think, hey, this is my last game at Beaver Stadium, and you got to go out and play as hard as you can. And you know, but it's got to be tough. You know, this season looks so promising at 5-0, and now they're sitting here at 6-4, and you know, you really got to dig down deep, and really, it's a pride thing. I think you know, you got to play not only your team pride, but your yourself, the pride in yourself, and your ability, and that's what you got to really count on this week, I think.
Rich, it is always a pleasure, my friend. Appreciate you very much. You know that.
Steve, thank you very much. Have a safe trip home, and have a good game tonight.
I appreciate that. Thanks, Rich. Rich Scarsella, Reading Eagle, always doing a great job, as always. And the Monday night game tonight is what's the Monday night game tonight?
It is the Rams and the Niners tonight.
Rams and 49ers?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, you know, as I was talking to Jerry, it's the league of the very good. I mean, the Rams have been, they have a lot of names on that team, but how many of those names are really good?
That's my view.
There will be a lot of focus. Now, tonight, Von Miller will get to play. I mean, I think Von Miller, on a line that includes Leonard Floyd, and Leonard Floyd's a very good, underrated player. I don't think Leonard Floyd gets enough because I think Aaron Donald sucks a lot of oxygen. It's not his that's not his fault, okay? He gets so much publicity. I think it's, you know, you forget some of the other guys they have are so talented. Plus, I think Jalen Ramsey did the same thing, too. But Miller, I think, will be helped because he can be singled up because of Leonard Floyd, not because of Aaron Donald, but because of Floyd on the other side. he'll be singled up. I think that makes a difference. No offense, but I don't see where Odell Beckham Jr. helps him. I mean, I really don't.
I agree. First of all, he can't stay on the field.
Yeah, but I just think when he's on the field, what threat is he? I mean, somebody's got to be realistic about. We are so into the name of somebody and the name. Oh, here he comes! Like, you know, yesterday Cam Newton gets in the lineup, and to his credit, I mean, great credit, he scores two touchdowns for Carolina, right? But let's be honest about it. He's not the same player as 5 years ago. He's not. Father Time is undefeated. Taking a lot of hits in your career is undefeated. And Odell Beckham Jr. is a name off of a catch or two, but he hasn't been a big game, big time player for years now. I'm not being cruel here. I'm just saying what the reality is. He could really help. Help in what way? I mean, Cooper Kupp's the best receiver they have. When Odell Beckham Jr. got there, that didn't change. It didn't change. Well, we got basketball tonight over at the Mullen Center as the Nittany Lions take on UMass. That will be tonight at 7 o'clock. I'm beginning at 6:30. Now, tomorrow we got Rob Beer Temple on the show. We got Matt McGloin on the show tomorrow as well. Let's see. Anybody that you threw in there tomorrow? Let's see. Oh, Rob and Neil Coulon, right?
That's correct.
We got a lot going. Yeah, we got a lot. So tomorrow's a busy show as well. And we'll have tomorrow's show back in the Sunbury Motors studio. Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. We'll wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
The weather is getting cooler and the leaves are changing in central PA. Hi, this is Season from Purdy Insurance. If your current agent is falling short, it's time to give Purdy Insurance a call. We're a local, family-owned independent agency ready to find the right insurance to fit your needs. You can call us at 570-286-5855, stop in our office on Market Street in Sunbury, or head to our website at purdyinsurance.com to find out what we can do for you.
And that one goes to the Penn State men's soccer team waking up as Big Ten champs after the win over the weekend to get the Big Ten title, and now they are in the big dance as well. So congratulations to the Nittany Lions men's soccer team. Didn't want to forget about that at all as they get the big win in the Big Ten title game over the weekend, and a impressive run it's been for the Nittany Lions men's soccer team. So congrats to them. We'll see what they can do now in the NCAA tournament as well. And also Bucknell women's soccer, while we're on the local front here on that level, of course, winning their first district title since 2017, I believe, or first Patriot League title, beg your pardon, since 2017. They lost to Rutgers yesterday, or over the weekend, I believe. So their season's done, but they had a tremendous run as well. So a couple nuggets there. And very interesting nuggets today from Jerry Dulac, and we'll have to keep an eye on what happens there with Big Ben, first of all, because we really didn't know where or how Big Ben got into the COVID list, because that came out really in the evening on Saturday, less than 24 hours before kickoff. So we're all kind of wondering what happened there. You didn't get the answers, so you see that limelight from Jerry Dulac, and if you missed that, we'll have it on the podcast after we're done here. And guess it was working up a little bit under the weather Friday. He goes to practice anyway, stays behind everybody, takes the test, turns out positive, and then, of course, he can't play. So we'll find out tomorrow if he can play at the Chargers, because that's obviously a decision that really looms large now. It's one thing when you're playing the winless Lions at home, Now you're on the road against the Chargers, who have been reeling. Yeah, they dropped another tough one at home yesterday to the Vikings. But especially things now in the AFC wildcard picture with the way things stand, that is a monster game for both teams. And, of course, AFC West still wide open despite how things went yesterday. KC able to take care of business, and they're in first place, but only by a game over the Raiders. Denver loses yesterday, so the Chargers are right there in the thick of things still, of course, to the Eagles. So it's definitely true what Jerry and Steve said, as there is no great team in the league, but there's several good teams. And I 100% agree with Jerry right now that I think if you're going to give the nod to whoever the best team is in the NFL right now, that would be the Tennessee Titans, as they pulled off the win yesterday against the Saints. So this is going to be a very interesting back half of the season for both PA teams, because you look at the Eagles after the big win against Denver. They are somehow in this thing for the playoffs. They're a game and a half behind the Saints, who come to the link this week. And they're a half game behind Carolina, who they already beat this year. So it'll be a lot of fun during this stretch of the season. So tomorrow on the show, Matt McGloin, Rob Beertemple, Neil Coulong, another loaded show for tomorrow as we continue rolling here. Thanks for joining us here on the Steve Jones Show. Again, today's show brought to you by our good friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury, or go to purdyinsurance.com. And Steve, always in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Humble's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Steve is back with you in about an hour and a half from now from Amherst. It's Penn State and UMass coming up at 6:30 with tip-off at 7 on WKOK.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.